A blue bar crosses a black background and condenses into a circle, Touchstone Pictures. A golden light slides along the letters and flashes into a lightning bolt through the circle. Sunlight crests the Earth's surface as rays of light shoot up from the continents. The planet spins into view, with a word across it, Universal. Universal Pictures. Touchstone Pictures and Universal Pictures present, in association with Studio Canal, a working title production. White letters on a black background, O Muse, sing in me and through me tell the story of that man skilled in all the ways of contending, a wanderer, harried for years on end. Convicts in black and white prison stripes line both sides of a road. Chained to each other at the ankles, they swing pickaxes and sledgehammers in unison at rocks. Guards armed with rifles watch over them. They work in the country. They swing.
Pick up that hammer there, boy.
They smash rocks. Against the black backdrop, cream letters inside a cream box. Oh, brother, where art thou?
One evening, as the sun.
The lines of prisoners continue to work on the road. Around them, crops wave in the breeze. Three convicts stand up in the crops and awkwardly run through them. One glances back and dives down. The others follow. The guards watch the convicts on the line and don't notice the missing prisoners.
In the big rock candy mountains,
George Clooney,
a land that's fair and bright,
John Turturro,
bushes,
Tim Blake Nelson.
And you sleep out every night.
The three convicts dart up from the crops and hobble away from the guards.
And the sun shines every day.
Charles Durning,
the birds and the bees and the cigarette
John
trees,
Goodman,
the lemonade springs where the bluebird
Michael Baldeluco,
the big rock candy mountains,
and Holly Hunter.
In the big rock candy
the convicts
mountain,
peer through leaves at a farm. A young boy leads a Clydesdale towards a barn. Stephen Root, Chris Thomas King, Wayne Duvall, Daniel Von Bargen. The three convicts, chained together at the leg, chase a chicken around the barnyard. Two leap at it. J.R. Horn, Brian Reddy, Frank Collison. Casting by Ellen Chenoweth. They run down the road, the flapping chicken clutched in the hand of a convict with a thin mustache. Supervising sound editor, Skip Leavesay. Film editors, Roderick Janes and Tricia Cook. Music by T-Bone Burnett. Costume designer, Mary Zofris. They sit around a campfire and devour the roasted chicken. They turn, eyes widening, at the bays of hounds. Production designer, Dennis Gasner. Director of Photography, Roger Deakins, ASC, BSC. Co-producer, John Cameron. Executive producers, Tim Bevan and Eric Filner. They run, in unison, through fields. Produced by Ethan Cohen. Written by Ethan Cohen and Joel Cohen. Based upon The Odyssey by Homer. Directed by Joel Cohen. They sprint through the field towards train tracks. The train chugs by as they get closer. Black smoke billows from the engine. The cars start to pass by. They run alongside the train towards an open car door. The mustached convict, his hair slicked back, grits his teeth and grasps the car door. He leverages himself into the car and nods at three men sitting inside. His comrades continue to run alongside the train. The men in the car make no reaction.
Hey, any of you boys, Smithies?
The short convict leaps in.
Or, if not Smithies per se, were you otherwise trained in the metallurgic arts before straightened circumstances forced you into life aimless wandering?
The third convict falls, pulling the short prisoner out of the car. The convict with slicked hair then hits the floor and slides out of the train. It continues on without them.
Jesus! Can't I count on you people?
Sorry, Everett.
Everett watches the caboose.
Well, all right. We take off through that bayou.
Wait a minute. Who elected you leader of this outfit?
Well, Pete, I figured it should be the one with the capacity for abstract thought. But if that ain't the consensus view, then hell, let's put her to a vote.
Suits me. I'm voting for yours truly.
Well, I'm voting for yours truly, too.
The short prisoner glances between Everett and Pete. They stare at him.
Okay. I'm with you fellas.
Everett jumps. He looks back in the direction they came. No dogs or police are visible. One by one, they stare down the tracks. A man drives a handcar towards them. Everett squints. As the old man gets closer, they run across his path and wave.
Mind if we join you, old-timer?
Jive me, my son. Jive.
They climb off. Everett notices that the old man is blind.
You work for the railroad, Grandpa?
I work for no man.
Got a name, do you?
I have no name.
Well, that right there may be the reason you've had difficulty finding gainful employment. You see, in the mart of competitive commerce...
You seek a great fortune. You three who are nigh in chains. You will find a fortune. Though it will not be the fortune you seek. But first you must travel a long and difficult road. A road fraught with peril. Mm-hmm. You shall see things wonderful to tell. You shall see a cow on the roof of a cotton house. And oh, so many starlings. I cannot tell you how long this road shall be, but fear not the obstacles in your path, for fate has vouchsafed your reward. Though the road may wind, yea, your hearts grow weary, still shall ye follow the road. Even unto your salvation.
The old man steadily, rhythmically, pumps the handles up and down. The train tracks cut through fields of crops. The handcar slowly makes its way down the tracks as the sun starts to set.
Oh, no, the treasure's still there, boys, believe me.
But how'd he know about the treasure?
Don't know, Dilmer. The blind are reputed to possess sensitivities compensating for their lack of sight, even to the point of developing paranormal psychic powers. Now, clearly seen in the future would fall neatly into that category. It's not so surprising, then, that an organism deprived of its earthly vision
would... He said we wouldn't get it. He said we wouldn't get the treasure we seek on account of our obstacle.
What the hell does he know? He's an ignorant old man. Jesus, Pete, I told you I buried it myself. Your cousin still has this here. Horse farm and a forge and some shoeing impedimenta to restore our liberty of movement.
A boy aims a shotgun.
Hold it right here!
He comes towards them.
You men from the bank?
You wash his bar?
Yes, sir. Daddy told me I'm to shoot who's ever from the bank.
Well, we ain't from the bank, young feller.
Yes, sir. Most are supposed to shoot folks serving papers.
We ain't got no papers, neither.
I nicked the census, man.
Now there's a good boy. Is your daddy about?
They make their way around a ramshackle house to a derelict backyard, filled with rusted bits of equipment. A cow drinks out of a tub. Wash, in overalls, whittles a stick. Everett and Delmar take off their hats.
Whoa, Pete. Who are your friends?
Pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. Hogwalt. My My name's Ulysses Everett McGill, and...
And I'm Delmar O'Donnell.
How you been, Wash? Been what, 12, 13 years?
Wash heaves himself to his feet.
Yep.
I expect you want them chains knocked off.
At the dinner table.
I foreclosed on Cousin Vester. He hanged himself a year come May.
And Uncle Rad live?
The anthrax took most of his cows. The rest don't milk. He lost the boy to mumps.
Where's Cora, Cousin Wong?
Wash eyes Pete. He glances at his son, perched atop some books, digging into his meal.
Couldn't say.
Wash glances away.
Mrs. Hogwall up in R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
Pete frowns.
She must have been looking for answers.
Possibly. Good riddance as far as I'm concerned. I do miss her cooking, though.
This stew's awful good.
You think so?
Wash eyes a piece of meat.
I slaughtered this horse last Tuesday. I'm afraid she's starting to turn.
Delmar stops chewing and glances at the others. The adults sit in the living room, listening to the radio. Everett meticulously combs his hair. He slicks the comb with pomade and works it through his dark hair. Pete and Delmar sit on the couch and sway to the music. Wash eyes Everett's fastidious movements.
Well, that winds up tonight's Pass the Biscuits Pappy O'Daniel Flower Hour. This is Pappy O'Daniel, hoping you folks been enjoying that good old-timey music. And remember, when you're fixing to fry up some flapjacks or bake a mess of biscuits, use cool, clear water and good, pure Pappy O'Daniel flour.
Well, guess I'll be turning in. Say, Cousin Wash, I suppose it'd be the acme of foolishness to inquire if you had a hairnet.
I got a bunch in yon bureau. It's a hog wallop, as a matter of fact. Help yourself. I won't be needing them.
Wash aggressively whittles a chunk of wood. Everett slumbers in a hairnet in a barn. Pete and Delmar snooze beside him.
How's my hair?
It's the daughter! We got you surrounded!
Damn, we're in a tight spot.
Just come on out and grab it in! And don't try nothing fancy. Your situation is putting out hopeless.
Damn, we're in a tight spot.
What in the Sam Hill?
Pete's cousin turned us in for the bounty.
The hell you say? Wash is kin!
Sorry, Pete. I know we're kin, but... They got this depression on. I got to do for me and mine.
I'm gonna kill you, Judas Iscariot, Hogwella, you miserable, horse-eating son!
They duck behind the barn door.
Damn, we're in a tight spot.
Damn his ass. Pa always said, never trust a Hogwella. Come and get us, coppers!
A cop splashes gas on the barn.
The barn is leaving us no choice but to smoke you out.
Damn. We're in a tight spot.
Light her up!
Go on, boys! Now, ain't you ever heard of negotiating? Hey, we talk this thing out! I hate fire!
You love me, low down, yellow belly!
Now, we got to speak one voice here. Careful with that fire now, boys!
A man in sunglasses with a dog watches.
That's enough, sir.
Ah! I hate fire!
Yeah, but two coppers down, you motherless born of hell!
Pete hurls a torch. The fire spreads to the police car.
Saint Christopher, get away from that vehicle, champ! She's lit the fire!
The flames ignite boxes of bullets. The police car is riddled with bullets from the inside out. Another car careens down the drive towards the barn. The cops dive out of the way as the police car explodes. The second car speeds by and crashes into the barn. The boy sits on books in the driver's seat.
Get out, boys! I'm gonna R-U-N-N-O-F-T!
Come on, boys! Come on!
Delmar jumps in with a piglet.
What are you doing here? You wanna be in bed, Trump Snatcher!
You ain't the boss of me!
The boy hits the gas, a wooden block tied to his foot so he can reach. They drive through the back of the barn and away from the cops. Later.
You candy-butted, car-thieving, so-and-so-and-so!
home and mind your pa.
Pete chucks a rock at the boy, who trudges away down the road with the piglet.
What's the damn problem?
The car's engine smokes in a store.
I can get the part from Bristol. It'll take 2 weeks. Here's your pomade.
2 weeks? That don't do me no good.
Here's Ford Auto Man's Bristol.
Hold on now. I don't want this pomade. I want Dapper Dan.
I don't care Dapper Dan. I care Fop.
Well, I don't want Fop, goddammit. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Watch your language, young fella. This is a public market. Now, if you want Dapper Dan, I can order it for you. Have it in a couple of weeks.
Well, ain't this place a geographical oddity? 2 weeks from everywhere. Forget it.
He slaps money down.
It's the dozen hairnets.
In the woods, Delmar holds a stick with a cooked carcass.
Well, didn't look like a one-horse town, but try finding a decent hair jelly.
Go for Everett.
And no transmission belt for 2 weeks neither.
Huh? They damned that river on the 21st. Today's the 17th.
Don't I know it?
We got but 4 days to get to that treasure. After that, it'll be at the bottom of a lake. We ain't gonna make it walking.
Well, that's right. Go for Everett. But the old tactician's got a plan.
A gold pocket watch.
For the transportation, that is. I don't know how I'm going to keep my coiffure in order.
How's this a plan? How are we going to get a car?
Sell that. I figure you can only have painful association for Wash.
To Washington Bartholomew Hogwaller. From his loving Cora. And more to this is.
This is in his bureau. I reckon it'll fetch us enough cash for a good used auto voiture and a little left over besides.
Whew. You got some light fingers, Everett. Gopher?
You miserable little snake. You stole from my kin!
Who was fixing to betray us.
You didn't know that at the time.
So I borrowed it till I did know.
That don't make no sense!
Pete, it's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of the human heart. Now, what the hell is that saying?
Men and women in white robes stroll through the woods.
Appears to be some kind of a congregation. Care for some gopher?
They stare in bewilderment. The people move towards the river.
No, thank you, Delmer. A third of a gopher would only arouse my appetite without bedding her back down.
Oh, you can have the whole thing. Me and Pete already had one. We ran across a whole gopher village.
Follow as the people form two lines into the river. One by one, a preacher gently dunks the head of each person into the water.
Hard times flush the chumps. Everybody's looking for answers. Enjoy.
Delmar shoves his hat at Pete and splashes into the river.
Where the hell's he going?
He wades to the preacher, who dunks him underwater.
Well, I'll be a son of a bitch. Delmar's been saved.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed. The preacher done washed away all my sins and transgressions. It's a straight and narrow from here on out. And heaven everlasting's my reward.
Delmar, what are you talking about? We got bigger fish to fry.
The preacher said all my sins is washed away, including that Piggly Wiggly I knocked over in Yazoo.
I thought you said you was innocent of those charges.
Well, I was lying. And the preacher said that that sin's been washed away, too. Neither God nor man's got nothing on me now. Come on in, boys. The water is fine.
Pete shoves his and Delmar's hats at Everett and runs for the river. Now, by a vacant campfire.
Come on, boy. Yeah, boy. Good dog.
The dog sniffs a tin of pomade.
All right, boys. We've got to see it.
The man with the dog holds a hairnet.
The preacher said it absolved him.
For him, not for the law. Surprised you, Pete. I gave you credit for more brains than Delmar.
But they was witnesses seen us redeemed.
That's not the issue, Delmar. Even if it did put you square with the Lord, the state of Mississippi's a little more hard-nosed.
You should have joined us, Everett. It couldn't have hurt none.
Hell, at least it would have washed away the stink of that pomade.
Join you two ignorant fools in a ridiculous superstition, thank you anyway, and I like the smell of my hair treatment. The pleasing odor's half the point.
Pete glares at Everett.
Baptism. You two are just dumber than a bag of hammers. Well, I guess you just might cross the bear.
Pull over, Everett. Let's give that colored boy a lift.
A man stands at a crossroads with his thumb out. He leans on a guitar case. They stop, and he peers in the window.
You folks going past Tishomingo?
Sure, hop in.
He climbs in the back seat with Delmar. Everett steers the car on down the deserted road.
How you doing, son? Name's Everett. These two soggy sons of bitches are Pete and Delmar. Keep your fingers away from Pete's mouth. He ain't had nothing to eat for 13 years except prison food, gopher, and a little greasy horse.
Thanks for the lift, sir. My name's Tommy. Tommy Johnson.
How you doing, Tommy? Say, I haven't seen a house out here for miles. What are you doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I had to be at that there crossroads last midnight. Sell my soul to the devil.
Well, ain't it a small world, spiritually speaking? Pete and Delmar just been baptized and saved. I guess I'm the only one that remains unaffiliated.
This ain't no laughing matter, Everett.
What'd the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, he taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Oh, son. For that, you traded your everlasting soul?
Well, I wouldn't use me. I've always wondered, what's the devil look like?
Well, of course, they're all manner of lesser imps and demons, Pete, but the great Satan himself is red and scaly with a bifurcated tail, and he carries a hayfork.
Oh, no. No, sir. He's white. As white as you folks. With empty eyes and a big, hollow voice. He loved to travel around with a mean old hound.
That's right.
And he told you to go to Tishomingo?
Well, no, sir. Well, that was my idea. I heard there's a man down there. He pays folks money singing to his camp. They say he pays an extra if you play real good.
Tishomingo, huh? How much he pay?
They drive down a dusty country road towards a small, deserted-looking building. A large radio tower looms next to it. They pull to a stop and climb out in front of WEZY Radio.
All right, boys. Follow my lead.
Single file, they march into the station.
Hello? Who's the honcho around here?
I am. Who are you?
Well, sir, I'm Jordan Rivers, and these here are the Soggy Bottom Boys out of Cottonelia, Mississippi. Songs of salvation to salve the soul. We hear that you pay good money to sing into a can.
Well, that all depends. You boys do Negro songs?
The blind station manager sits.
Sir, we are Negroes. All except for the fellow that plays a guitar.
Yeah, well, I don't record Negro songs. No, I'm looking for some old-timey material. You see, people can't seem to get enough of it. Since we started broadcasting it on the Pappy Old Daniel Flower Hour, so thank you for stopping by. But...
Sir, the Soggy Bottom Boys have been steeped in old-timey material. Heck, we're silly with it, ain't we, boys?
That's right.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
We ain't really Negroes.
Oh, except for our accompanists.
Everett sings into the microphone can.
I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place was born in rain. For 6 long years I've been in trouble. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble.
A turntable spins a thin black disc under a stylus, which inscribes grooves for the future record.
He has no friends to help him now. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you
Okay, sir, but Merton Aloysius will have to just sign X's. Only 4 of us can write.
That'll be fine.
They leave.
Hey, mister. I don't mean to be telling tales out of school, but there's a fella in there who'll pay you $10 if you sing into his can.
I'm not here to make a record, you dumb cracker. They broadcast me out on the radio.
That's Governor Menelaus. Pass the biscuits, Pappy O'Daniel. And ain't you appreciated if you ate his farina and voted him a second term?
Finest governor we ever had in Mississippi.
In any state?
Oh, Lord, yes. Every parish or precinct.
He was making the bigger point.
Well, ain't you gonna press the flesh, Pappy? Do a little politicking?
I'll press your flesh, you dim-witted sumbitch. You don't tell your pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yes. That's a powerful new force.
Mm-mm. Shake your leg, Junior. Thank God your mammy died giving birth. Should have seen you, should have died of shame. Well, hi there, how you doing?
Pappy and his entourage enter the station.
Oh, tell me, where you go? And it's harder than before.
Everett, in his hairnet, stares thoughtfully into a campfire. Tommy plays the guitar.
And the people are drifting, door to door. Can't find no heaven, I don't care where they go.
Pete stares into the flames. Delmar lies on the ground, using a rock as a pillow.
Mm-hmm. Say you had money, you better be sure. These hard times will drive you from door to door.
Bed down here for the night.
Yeah, stinks in that old barn.
Suits me. Pretty soon it'll be nothing but feather beds and silk sheets.
Everett settles on the ground. Pete sips from a metal mug.
$1 million.
$1.2 million.
$500,000 each.
$400, Delmar. Pete? What are you gonna do with your share of the treasure?
Go out west somewhere. Open a fine restaurant. I'm gonna be the maitre d'.
He grins.
Greet all the swells. Go to work every day in a bow tie, tuxedo. And all the staff say yes, sir, and nah, sir, and in a jiffy pee. No, my meals for free.
He gazes longingly into the fire and smiles faintly.
What about you, Delmar? What are you going to do with your share of that dough?
I'm going to visit them foreclosing son of a guns down at the Indianola Savings and Loan. slap that money on the barrel head and buy back the family farm.
He shakes his head.
You ain't no kind of man if you ain't got land.
What about you, Everett? What you have in mind when you stole it in the first place?
I have no plan.
Well, that hardly sound like you.
All right, boys. It's the authorities. Your situation is putting out hopeless.
Damn. They found our car.
We ain't got the time and now the inclination to jail you boys any further.
Damn. We got a skedaddle.
I left my pomade in the car. Maybe I can creep up.
Don't be a fool, Everett. We got a R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
Where's Tommy?
Already let out. Scared out of his wits.
The man with the dog watches the barn burn.
Let's go.
They rush off.
Well, hell, it ain't square one. Ain't no one gonna pick up three filthy, unshaved hitchhikers. And one of them a know-it-all who can't keep his trap shut.
Pete, the personal rancor reflected in that remark I don't intend to dignify with comment. But I would like to address your general attitude of hopeless negativism. Consider the lilies of the goddamn field. Or hell, take a look at Delmar here as your paradigm of hope.
Yeah, look at me.
Now, you may call it an unreasoning optimism. You may call it obtuse. But the plain and simple fact is that we got close to 3 days before they...
Clouds of dust billow in the distance from an oncoming car.
And that river.
The car speeds towards them. They stand in the middle of the road and stare as it draws closer. Bits of paper fly out of the car and into the air. The car hits a bump and goes airborne. Everett tilts his head. The car draws to a stop. A baby-faced man leans out the window.
Is this a road to Itabena?
Pete and Everett squint.
Itabena?
Delmar snags a floating piece of paper. It's cash. Everett spots a line of cars speeding their way.
Take this road.
Nah, that ain't right.
It seems to me there's a road, cow road, that used to lead all the way, well, most of the way. That ain't right either.
Hop on in while you give it a think.
They climb into the car. It peels off down the road.
Any of you boys know your way around the Walter PPK?
Well, see, that's where we can't help you. I don't believe it's in Mississippi.
Friend, some of your folding money has come unstowed.
Just stuff it down that sack there, will you? You boys aren't bad men, I take it.
Well, it's funny you should ask. I was bad till yesterday, but me and Pete here have been saved. I'm Delmar, and that there's Everett.
George Nelson. It's a pleasure. Grab the tiller, will you, buddy?
Opening the door, George stands and leans out. Everett slides behind the wheel. George grins.
Hand me that chopper.
Say, what line of work you in, George?
George fires his Tommy gun.
Come and get me, Captain! You flat-footed, lame-brained, soft-ass sons of bitches! Now you can catch me! I'm George Nelson! I'm bigger than any John live or live! I'm 10.5 feet tall! Leave you to the road!
Cows.
I hate cows worse than cappers!
He shoots the cows and starts to stampede.
Oh, George, not the livestock.
Come on, you miserable salary sons of bitches! Come and get me!
The cows run into the road. One of the cars chasing George hits one. George keeps shooting as they speed away. They pull into a spot outside a small town bank. They climb out and follow George.
Come on, boys, we're going for the record. 3 banks in 2 hours!
They run into the bank. George leaps onto a counter.
Okay, folks, hold the applause and drop your drawers. I'm George Nelson, and I'm here to sack the city of Itabena.
He leaps down.
He's a
live wire, though, ain't he?
All the money in a bag. What are you looking at, Grandpa?
Pardon me, George. You got a plan for getting out of here?
Sure, boys.
Dynamite lines his coat.
Here's my plan. They ain't never seen ordinance like this. Thank you, folks. And remember, Jesus saves, but George Nelson withdraws. Go fetch the Orvator, Pete. Who said that?
George glares at the patrons.
What ignorant, low down, slanderizing son of a bitch said that?
The old lady looks away.
My name is George Nelson. Get me?
She didn't mean nothing by it, George.
George Nelson, not Babyface. You remember, and you tell your friends, I'm George Nelson. Born to raise hell.
He pouts his lips at the bank patrons and trudges out after Everett and Delmar. Everett, Delmar, Pete, and George sit around a fire. Pete plays the guitar. George stares thoughtfully at the ground.
Well, that was some fun, though, wasn't it, George?
Yeah.
Almost makes me wish I hadn't have been saved. Jacking up banks. I can see how a fella'd derive a whole lot of pleasure and satisfaction out of it.
It's okay.
Who doggies?
Delmar tips his mug to George, whose shoulders heave.
Well.
George leans back.
I'm taking off.
He rises to his feet. Everett and Pete exchange looks.
You boys might as well keep my share of the riches.
He empties his pockets.
Well, where are you going, George?
I don't know. Who cares?
He wanders off.
Now, what do you suppose is eating George?
Well, Delmar, they say that with the thrill-seeking personality, what goes up must come down. Top of the world one minute, haunted by megrims the next. Yes, sir. It's as if our old friend George is a alley cat and his own damn humors are swinging him by the tail. I wouldn't worry, Delmar. He'll be back on top again. I don't think we've seen the last George Nelson.
Pete shoves the fallen money into his hat. George trudges off into the night. Daytime, a farmer stops his horse-drawn plow and leans against the handles. A pickup truck trundles down the road towards him. A music group stands in the truck bed with instruments and megaphones.
Don't be sense for Pappy. Home us stones for governor. Let's sweep this thing clean. Home us stones, brother.
The farmer watches the Homer Stokes campaign truck trundle past the WEZY radio station across the road. The station manager puts a song on and leans back.
I'm gonna slap one on here. Folks, here's my cousin Ezra's niece, Eudora, from out of Greenwood, doing a little number with her cousin Tom Tom, which I predict you're gonna enjoy thoroughly.
A dapper man in a bow tie sits with him.
Now, what can I do you for, Mr. French?
How can I lay hold of them soggy bottom boys?
Soggy bottom? I don't precisely recollect him.
They cut a record in here a few days ago with an old-timey harmony thing with a guitar company.
Him. Remember them? Colored fellas, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they're a fine bunch of boys. They sang in the yonder can and skidded.
Well, that record is just going through the goddamn roof. They playing it as far away as Mobile.
No.
Whole damn state's going apey.
Well, it was a powerful end.
Hot damn, we gotta find them boys and sign them to a big fat contract. Hell's bells, Mr. Lund. If we don't, the goddamn competition will.
Oh, mercy, yes, we got to beat that competition.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Everett, Pete, and Delmar stroll down a road through a mossy forest. Seven miles outside Santa Rita, they pass two barefoot boys in overalls, each toting a large block of ice. The boys' pants are dark with water from the melting ice. They take no notice of the three men, as they pass on an otherwise empty country road. A steaming pie sits on an open windowsill. Everett's handkerchief-covered hands reach up and snatch it off the sill. He and Pete run. Delmar leaves a dollar under a rock on the ledge. They sprint away from the house with their stolen pastry. Nighttime. They sit around a fire and shove pieces of pie into their mouths. Their plates are folded up pieces of newspaper. They grin to each other as they devour their spoils. Everett tosses his newspaper on the fire. The front page burns away to reveal a headline. The Soggy Bottom Boy is a sensation, but who are they? Daytime. They carefully pick their way around towering tree trunks and through algae-covered swamp water. The swamp is completely still except for them. They stand on the side of the road, thumbs and handkerchiefs out. Everett suddenly sneezes, then bends over to tie his shoe. Pete and Delmar huddle with their backs to the road as a truck of convicts drives past. At a store.
Do you have the Soggy Bottom Boys performing Man of Constant Sorrow?
No, ma'am. We got a new shipment in yesterday. Sorry, but we just can't keep it on ourselves.
The convicts stand under an awning and stare up at the rainy sky. Elsewhere, a record spins on a turntable. Around a campfire, Everett acts out a story. He hunches his shoulders and swings his arms, his fingers curved like hooks. They stroll down a road and hold their thumbs out to a passing truck. It slows. Everett climbs in the front while Pete and Delmar hoist themselves into the bed. Pete whacks the side of the truck and the driver takes off. In a general store, Everett directs the cashier towards a tin of his favorite pomade. The cashier grabs it with a reacher claw. On their way out of the store, they pass a dapper man in a suit. As the man enters, they race towards his car, dive in, and speed off down the road. The owner doesn't notice as they accelerate away from the store. Delmar plucks at a banjo as they drive through the woods. Pete's eyes swivel from side to side.
Shut up, Delmar!
He bites his fist. They race to a riverbank and see three vixens sitting on rocks in the water, washing clothes. Their wet dresses cling to their bodies.
Guess old Pete's got the itch.
They stare, mesmerized at the three women.
Go to sleep, you little baby. Go to sleep, you little baby. Your mama's gone away and your daddy's gonna stay. Didn't leave nobody but the baby.
How to do, ladies? Name of Pete.
Go to sleep, you little baby. Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the baby.
Ain't you gonna introduce us, Pete?
I don't know their names. I've seen them first.
You're a sweet little baby. Honey.
The women each meet a convict's gaze with seductive looks.
Bring a bottle to the baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby. She's long gone with her red shoes on. Gonna need another loving baby.
The sirens slowly make their way towards the men.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
My name is Ulysses Everett McGill, and
go to sleep.
Well, you three
baby.
Ladies are about the prettiest.
Me and the devil makes three.
Don't yes.
Need no other loving baby.
Water lilies.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Come on, look her.
Go to sleep.
Each siren goes to one of the men. The woman with Everett tilts a jug of liquor into his mouth.
Three, don't need no other loving baby. to sleep, you little babe. Go to sleep, you little babe. Your mama's gone away and your daddy's gonna stay.
The women caress the men's faces, run their fingers through their hair, and press against them. Everett's siren encourages him to drink more. The liquor jug bears three X's in a row. Delmar stands entranced as his siren caresses his cheek. The scene fades to black as his siren runs her fingers across his face. Everett takes a long pull off a jug of liquor. Later, Delmar blinks his eyes open. He's lying on the ground, spread-eagled. He lifts his head and looks up. Across from his stretched-out legs is Everett, lying spread-eagled and still asleep. Delmar's face twists in confusion. He turns his head to the side. An empty set of clothes lies on the ground. As if the person wearing them just vanished. Delmar heaves himself to his feet. The clothes belong to Pete.
Everett.
Everett doesn't twitch.
Everett.
My hair.
Everett touches his disheveled hair.
Look at this.
Everett blinks and heaves himself up. The clothes lie perfectly put together on the ground, shirt tucked in, suspenders up, shoes tied. Everett looks around. Something in the shirt pulses. Delmar gapes.
Oh, we ain't got time for your shenanigans!
Sweet Jesus, Everett. They left his heart.
Everett stares down at the shirt. The chest of the shirt pulses up and down. The object in the shirt moves closer to the collar. Delmar's mouth hangs open. A toad pokes its head out of the collar, hops out of the shirt and onto the ground.
Can't you see it, Everett? Them sirens did this to Pete. They loved him up and turned him into a horny toad.
Everett gazes at the toad in confusion. The toad hops towards the water.
Pete! Pete! Pete!
Delmar splashes into the river and flails around, looking for the toad. He resurfaces, toad in hand.
Pete, it's me, Delmar. It's me, Delmar. Everett. What are we going to do?
The toad leaps. Delmar lunges to catch it. Everett drives down the road and glances at Delmar, who stares at the toad clutched in his hands.
I'm not sure that's Pete.
Of course it's Pete. Look at him.
He holds the toad out.
We gotta find some kind of wizard can change him back.
Everett stares steadfastly out the windshield.
Just not sure that's Pete.
They put the toad in a shoebox. Everett slams on the lid.
You can't display a toad in a fine restaurant like this while the good folks here go right off the feed.
Hey, I just don't think it's right keeping him under wraps like we's ashamed of him.
Well, if it is Pete, I am ashamed of him. The way I see it, he got what he deserved, fornicating with some whore of Babylon. These things don't happen for no reason, Delmar. It's obviously some kind of judgment on Pete's character.
Well, the two of us was fixing to fornicate.
The waitress pauses.
You're going to have to excuse my rusticated friend, unaccustomed as he is to city manners. No. I guess we'll...
At a nearby table, a large man in an eye patch turns.
Red native potatoes, and we'll wash it down with your finest bubbly wine. Oh, and I don't suppose you have any nits or grubs back in the pantry. The chef could prepare... No, just bring us a couple of leaves of raw cabbage.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That kind of barnyard.
I don't believe I've seen any boys around here before. Allow me to introduce myself. Name of Daniel Teague, known in these precincts as Big Dan Teague. All of those who are pressed for time, Big Dan Tootcourt.
How you doing, Big Dan? My name is Ulysses Everett McGill. This is my associate, Delmar McDonald. I detect, like me, you're endowed with the gift of gab.
I flatter myself that such is the case. In my line of work, it's plumb necessary. The one thing you don't want...
He notices the shoebox.
...is air in the conversation.
Once again, we find ourselves in agreement. What kind of work you do, Big Dan?
Sales, Mr. McGill, sales. And what do I sell? The truth, every blessed word of it, from Genesis on down to Revelations. That's right. The word of God, which, let me tell you, there is damn good money in during these times of woe and want. People are looking for answers, and Big Dan sells the only book that's got them. And what do you do, you and your tongue-tied friend?
Delmar looks to Everett.
We're adventurers, sir, currently pursuing a certain opportunity, but we're open to others as well.
I like your style, young man, so I'm going to propose you a proposition. You cover my bill so I don't have to run back upstairs. Get your waitress to wrap your dinner picnic style, and we shall retire to more private environs where I will tell you how there are vast amounts of money to be made in the service of God Almighty.
Why not? Nothing else. I could use some civilized conversation.
Don't forget your shoebox, friend.
Language! Goddamn campaign is language! We need a shot in the arm. You hear me, boys? In a goddamn arm. Legend held tomorrow that some bitch Stokes would win it in a walk.
Well, he's the reform candidate, Daddy.
Yeah?
Well, people like that reform. And maybe we should get us some.
I'll reform you, you soft-headed some bitch. How are you gonna run reform on with a damn incumbent? Is that the best idea you boys can come up with? Reform?
Weeping Jesus on the cross.
Eckert!
You may as well start drafting my concession speech right now.
Okay, Pappy. We're just making a point, you stupid son of a bitch. Give me back that hat! Hurry up!
Pappy's just making a point.
Shut up!
Pappy throws his hat again. Everett, Pete, and Big Dan sit under a tree and eat. Big Dan sucks on a chicken bone and eyes the others and the shoebox. Delmar studies a butterfly perched on his hand.
Thank you, boys, for throwing in that fricassee. I'm a man of large appetites, and even with lunch under my belt, I was feeling mighty peckish.
It's our pleasure, Big Dan.
Thank you as well for the conversational hiatus. I generally refrain from speech during gustation. There are those who attempt both at the same time.
He wipes his mouth.
I find it coarse and vulgar. Where were we?
Making money in the Lord's service.
You don't say much, friend, but when you do, it's to the point, and I salute you for it. Yes, Bible sales. Now, the trade is not a complicated one. There are but two things to learn. One being where to find a wholesaler. The word of God in bulk, as it were. Two, how to recognize your customer. Who are you dealing with? It's an exercise in psychology, so to speak. And it is that which I propose to give you a lesson in right now.
He pulls a branch from the tree.
Well, I like to think I'm a pretty astute observer of the human scene, too, Big Dan.
No doubt, brother. I figured as much back at the restaurant. That's why I invited y'all out here for this advanced tutorial.
He hits Delmar with the branch.
Come on, Big Dan.
It's all about the money, boys. That's it. Don't.
Right. I don't get it, Big Dan.
He thumps Everett with the branch.
Just take your show cards.
He pulls money out of Everett's overalls. Delmar leaps on his back. Everett spits out a mouthful of corn. Big Dan spins and hurls Delmar off.
And whatever you got in the hole.
He lifts and opens the shoebox. He frowns down at it.
What? That ain't nothing but a damn toe.
No, you don't understand. That's Pete.
He grabs the toad in his meaty hand.
Pete. You know these things give you warts?
He closes his fist and crushes the toad. Delmar's eyes go wide. Big Dan hurls the carcass at the tree.
You end the lesson. So long, boys. See you in the funny paper. Y'all seen the end of Big Dan T.
He strides over their prone bodies and climbs into their car. He drives away. Delmar struggles up onto his elbows and stares at where Big Dan threw the toad. His shoulders shake with his sobs. At night, Pete hangs from a tree by his hands. Police whip him.
Where are they?
To
Fuck, you unreconstructed whelp of a whore! Where are they headed? Your screams ain't gonna save your flesh. Only your tongue is, boy. Where are they headed?
The man with the dog approaches. His sunglasses reflect the light from the torches. Pete gapes in fear. The bloodhound pulls on his leash as the man stops.
Bump, I hope.
Pete's chest heaves. The man stoically stares at him. His marshal's badge glints in the firelight.
Sweet summer rain.
He stares at Pete.
Like God's own mercy.
The fire's reflection flickers.
Your two friends have abandoned you, Pete. They don't seem to care about your life.
They stare at each other. The marshal glances at the police officers.
Okay.
A noose is tossed over a branch of the tree.
Stay away to heaven, Pete.
Pete closes his eyes as the noose is slipped over his head.
We shall all meet by and by.
God damn it! God forgive me!
Oh.
The marshal's expression remains impassive. He stares unwaveringly. Everett and Delmar sit dejectedly in the back of a truck carrying bales of hay.
Believe me, Delmar, he would have wanted us to press on. Pete, rest his soul, was one sour-ass son of a bitch and not given the axe a pointless sentimentality.
It just don't seem right digging up that treasure without him.
Maybe it's for the best he was squished. Barely a sentient being. But as soon as we get ourselves cleaned up and we get a little smell in our hair, boy, we're going to feel 100% better about ourselves and about life in general. Let's be near Parchment Farm.
They pass working convicts.
Sorry, sons of bitches. Seems like a year ago we bust off the farm.
As they drive by, one prisoner looks up. It's Pete. Everett squints.
Pete got a brother.
Not that I'm aware.
Everett stares. Pete stands out of line, watching them.
Heat must be getting to him.
They leave the lines of working convicts behind in a cloud of dust. A group of plaid-wearing musicians perform at a campaign rally for Homer Stokes.
Pushing hope that we cherish so deep. The cloud and storm will in time pass.
The audience clap along with the music. Posters of a balding man, Homer Stokes, plaster the stage.
If we'll keep on the sunny side of life. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life.
Stokes and a little person take the stage. They carry brooms.
Yeah. Now I know the sunny siders would agree with me when I say that the great state of Mississippi cannot afford four more years of Pappy O'Daddle. Four more years of cronyism, nepotism, rascalism, and slaves to the enemy.
He holds a hand up.
Now, the choice, she's a clear. Yeah, Pappy O'Daddle, slave of the interest. Homer Stokes, slave of the little man. Ain't that right, little fella?
He ain't lying.
And ladies and gentlemen, the little man has admonished me to grasp the broom of reform and sweep this state clean. It's gonna be back to the flour mill, Pappy. The interest can take care of themselves. Come Tuesday, we're gonna sweep the rafters out.
The truck pulls into the square.
Clean government. Yo, for the act.
Everett and Delmar get on.
Oh, add a little lobby gal.
Everett stares.
Warby gals? Did he just say little Warby gals?
Come here, girl. What y'all gonna sing for?
In the highway.
In the highway. God damn it all.
You know them gals, Everett?
In the highways, in the hedges. In the highways, in the hedges.
They push through the crowd towards the stage where three little girls sing. They zigzag around people. Everett's eyes are glued to the stage. The oldest girl has curly hair, the middle is a brunette, and the youngest is blonde. Everett steps up to the stage. He wraps them up in a hug.
Daddy? He ain't our daddy.
Hell, I ain't. What's this Warby gals? Your name's McGill.
No, sir, not since you got hit by that train.
What are you talking about? I wasn't hit by any train.
Mama says she was hit by a train. Bluey. Nothing left. Just a grease spot on the L and N.
Damn it. I wasn't hit by any train.
That's right. Now Mama's got us back to Warby. That's a maiden name. You got a maiden name, Daddy?
No, Daddy don't have a maiden name. She...
That's your misfortune. That's right. And now Mama's got a new beau. He's a suitor.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Mama says that he's bona fide.
His face scrunches up.
You give her a ring?
Yes, sir. Big one. Got it, Jim. Mama checked it. It's bona fide. He's a suitor.
What's his name?
Vernon T. Waldrop. Uncle Vernon. Till tomorrow. Then he's gonna be daddy.
I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn paterfamilias.
But you ain't bona fide.
He frowns, then looks around.
Where's your mama?
She's at the Five and Dime, buying nipples.
He leaves them. He marches into the Five and Dime and takes off his hat.
Daddy!
Hello, sugar. Huh? How's my little girl?
A woman cradling a baby stares at him.
Who the hell's that?
Starla Warby.
Starla McGill, you mean? How come you never told me about her?
She was hit by a train.
That's another thing. Why are you telling our gals I was hit by a train?
Lots of respectable people been hit by trains. Judge Hobby over in Cookville was hit by a train. What was I supposed to tell him? That you were sent to the penal farm and I divorced you from Shane?
I take your point, but it does put me in a damn awkward position vis-a-vis my progeny.
Hello, Penny.
A tall man approaches.
This gentleman bothering you?
Everett sizes him up.
You Waldrop?
Uh-huh, that's right.
They lock gazes. Everett sidles up to Waldrop, who is several inches taller than him. He leans in and sniffs. Waldrop stares, wide-eyed.
You been using my hair treatment?
Your hair treatment?
Excuse me.
Everett ushers Penny away from Waldrop.
I got news for you, in case you hadn't noticed. I wasn't hit by a train. And I have traveled many a weary mile to be back with my wife and my six daughters.
Seven, Daddy.
That ain't your daddy, Alvinel. Your daddy was hit by a train.
Now, Penny, you stop that.
No, you stop it. Vernon here's got a job. Vernon's got prospects. He's bona fide. What are you?
I'll tell you what I am. I'm the paterfamilias, and you can't marry him.
I can, I am, and I will. Tomorrow, I got to think about the little Warby gals. They look to me for answers. Vernon can support them and buy them lessons on the clarinet. The only good thing you ever did for the gals was to get hit by that train.
Well, you lying, unconstant. Succubus.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! You can't swear at my fiancée.
Oh, yeah? Well, you can't marry my wife.
He swings at Waldrop, who ducks. Waldrop holds his fists up, one outstretched, the other by his face. He punches Everett twice. Everett shakes it off and circles, his fists out at his sides. He swings and misses. Waldrop punches him in the face twice with his left and once with his right. Everett staggers back. A bystander leans in.
Who is that man?
Penny stares.
He's not my husband. Just a drifter, I guess. Just some no-account drifter.
The store clerk tosses Everett outside.
And stay out of the Woolworth!
Everett and Delmar slouch in seats at the cinema. A vaudeville movie plays in the background.
I'll bet she does imitations, too.
Deceitful, two-faced she-wolf. Never trust a female, Delmar. Remember that one simple precept, and your time with me will not have been ill-spent.
Okay, Everett.
hit by a train. Truth means nothing to a woman, Delmer. Triumph of the subjective. You ever been with a woman?
Well, I...
He looks away.
I got to get the family farm back before I can start thinking about that.
That's right. If then. Believe me, Delmer. Women is the most fiendish instrument of torture ever devised to bedevil the days of man.
Everett, I never figured you for a pater familias.
Oh, yes. I have spread my seed. Look what it said.
The movie slows. The screen goes black. The theater door opens, and a prison guard lurches in. He holds his rifle up and gazes around the theater. Everett and Delmar whip around and slump in their seats. A door at the front opens. Everett and Delmar blink into the light and hunch down. A second guard enters and stands guard by the door. A line of chained prisoners jogs into the theater. Everett covers his face, and Delmar slouches down further as the prisoners jog past them. They file into a row, a few behind Everett and Delmar's. The prisoners remain standing. One of the doors shuts, blanketing the theater in darkness. Everett and Delmar perk up. The convicts sit.
Okay, boys. Enjoy your picture show.
The second door closes, and the movie starts back up.
That's so strange.
I have no money.
Everett and Delmar exchange looks.
How can I dress?
No. Save the treasure.
They turn around. Pete sits amongst the cons.
Do not seek the treasure.
They lean towards him.
It's a bushwhack. They're fixing an ambush. Do not seek the treasure.
Pete looks around. No one pays him any attention.
We thought you was a toad.
Pete mouths, what? Delmar sits up taller.
We thought you was toad. Do not seek the treasure.
Right there, what's the picture?
Everett and Delmar hastily turn back around. At Pappy's plantation.
I signed that bill. I signed a dozen agriculture bills. Everyone knows I'm a friend of the farmer. What I gotta do, start dealing livestock?
We can't do that, Daddy. We might offend our constituency.
We ain't got a constituency. Stokes got a constituency.
Well, it's a well-run campaign. Midget and broom and whatnot.
Devil is due.
Hell of an organization.
Say, I got an idea.
What's that, Junior?
We could hire us a little fella even smaller than Stokes's.
You?
Slump shoulders, sack of guts! Why, we look like a bunch of Johnny-come-latelys, bragging on our own midget. Don't matter how stumpy. And that's the goddamn problem right there. People think that Stokes has got fresh ideas. He's old Corant, and we the past.
It's a problem of,
perception.
That's right.
Reason why he's pulling our pants down.
Gonna paddle a little behind.
Ain't gonna paddle it. Gonna kick it real hard.
No, I believe he's going to paddle it.
I don't believe that's a proper description.
Well, that's how I'd characterize it.
I believe it's more of a kicking situation.
Pappy slowly turns and stares at them. Lightning illuminates bare, knobby branches of trees and an empty noose. Bunk beds line the sleeping quarters of a prison. Pete lies awake.
God, forgive me. I could not gaze upon that far show.
Everett appears. He's on Delmar's shoulders.
Hold still!
Can't stand much longer. It was a moment of weakness.
Quit your babbling, Pete. We gotta get out.
That's all I got.
Delmar drops.
They lured me out for a bathe, and then they dunked me and trussed me up like a hog and tear me in for the bounty.
Should have guessed it. Typical womanly behavior. Just lucky we left before they came back for us.
You didn't abandon you, Pete. We just thought you was a toad.
No, they never did turn me into a toad.
Well, that was our mistake then. And we was beat up by a Bible salesman and banished from Woolworth's. I don't know, Everett, was it the one branch or all of them?
Well, I ain't had it easy either, boys.
They have coal smudged on their faces.
I spilled my guts about the treasure.
Huh? They stare at him.
I'm awful sorry I betrayed you, fellas. Must be my hog wall of blood.
He looks away. Everett purses his lips.
That's all right, Pete.
It's awful white of you to take it like that, Everett. I feel wretched. Spoiling your play for $1,000,000.2. Isn't it not my girl?
Oh, that's all right.
Oh, you boys are true friends. Oh.
Pete hugs them.
You're my boo companions.
Pete, I don't want you to beat yourself up about this, eh?
I can't help it, but that's a wonderful thing to say.
Everett squeezes out of Pete's hug. Yeah.
Pete, the fact of the matter is...
He can't make eye contact with Pete.
Damn it. There ain't no treasure.
Pete and Delmar stare and slowly separate.
Fact of the matter is, I never was.
But, so, where's all the money from the armored car job?
I never knocked over no armored car. Sent up for practicing law without a license.
But...
Damn it, I had to bust out. My wife wrote me she was getting married. I gotta stop it.
I had 2 weeks left on my sentence.
I couldn't wait 2 weeks. She's getting married tomorrow.
My added time for the escape. I don't get out now to 1987.
No, I am sorry about that.
I'll be 84 years old.
I guess they'll tack on 50 years for me, too.
Boys, we was chained together. I had to tell you something. Busting out alone was not an option.
He looks down.
Sorry.
He turns away.
84 years old.
Delmar brightens.
Well, I'll only be 82.
He grins.
You ruined my life!
Pete grabs Everett.
You ruined my life!
I do apologize about that, Pete.
84 years old. I'll be going. Stop you long. You...
Now, boys.
Pete tackles Everett. He gets him in a headlock and wrenches. They tumble down a hill. Delmar chases after them. They peer over a bush. Light from a fire illuminates their faces. They gape at a congregation of Ku Klux Klan members in white robes and pointed hats that cover their faces. The members chant and march in circles. A cross burns next to a platform where the leader, in red, watches. The Klan members turn in circles. Everett, Pete, and Delmar stare, mouths hanging open. In unison, the Klan members squat and rise. They start to separate into a middle group and a surrounding fringe group. They lift their hands into the air, then hunch over and turn in a circle. A member rings a giant bell. The Klan members march with a purpose, form lines, and halt. They stand in still silence and regard the leader in red. The leader raises his arms.
Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year?
The Klan members begin to rhythmically march in formation.
Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell. Oh, death, someone would pray. Could you wait to call me another day?
Everett spots Tommy being held by two Klan members.
It's Tommy. They got Tommy.
They stare as Klan members march past Tommy.
News.
Pete eyes the rope on a gallows.
Sweet Jesus, we gotta save him.
The Klan members march in an intricate pattern.
I'll fix your feet till you can't walk. I'll lock your jaw till you can't talk. I'll close your eyes so you can't see this very hour come and go.
Color guard.
Three Klan members with red stripes across their white uniforms stand near them. One holds a Confederate flag. The Klan members march into the shape of a cross.
Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over to another year?
The Klan members halt.
Brothers!
Everett, Pete, and Delmar drag the color guards away.
We have all gathered here to preserve our hallowed culture and heritage.
They emerge dressed as color guards.
Inclusion and dilution of color, of creed, and of our old-time religion. We aim to pull evil up by the root before it chokes out the flower of our culture and heritage. And our women, let's not forget those ladies, y'all, looking to us for protection from darkies, from Jews, from papists, and from all those smart-ass folks say we come descended from monkeys. That's not my culture and heritage.
Yes.
Is that your culture and heritage?
No.
And so, we gonna hang us a Negro.
The Klan members standing in a cross formation separate in half to form two lines. Tommy is dragged through the throngs of Klan members. The others march in place as he passes.
I ain't never harmed you. Neither you gentlemen.
Everett, Pete, and Delmar hurry to catch up. They pass a large Klan member with only one eye hole in his mask. He turns to look at them. They fumble at marching to the rhythm. Big Dan lifts his mask. He sniffs the air. His right eye is pale and murky.
I ain't never harmed nobody.
Tommy draws closer to the burning cross and the noose.
Hey, Tommy.
Huh?
Sir, we come to rescue you.
That's mighty kind of you boys, but I don't think none's gonna save me now. The devil's come to collect his due.
Don't be crazy, Tommy. You don't want to get hind.
Well, no, I don't reckon I do, but that's the way it seems to be working out.
Big Dan storms down the line.
Listen, Tommy, I got a plan.
He rips off Everett's mask, revealing his coal-covered face. He tears Pete's off next. The leader lifts his mask. It's Homer Stokes.
Color guard is colored.
Delmar swings the flag.
Who made them the color guard?
The Klan members close in. Delmar swings the flag at them.
Good boys!
They run towards the cross. The Klan members give chase. Big Dan holds them back.
No, no, son.
The flag is hurled like a javelin.
Can't let that flag touch the ground.
It arcs through the air towards Big Dan, standing at the center of a semicircle. He catches it, an inch from his nose. Everett cuts the wire holding up the cross. They run away. The cross falls straight towards Big Dan. He stares, immobile. Pappy's car pulls up outside a town hall. He lumbers out.
I'm saying we should hire this man away.
That's a good idea, Pappy.
Hell of an idea.
Can't beat him, join him.
Have him join us. Run our campaign. Still that egghead.
Possums of power, wealth, etc.
No one says no to Pappy O'Daniel.
Oh, gracious, no. Not with his blandishments.
Powers of persuasion.
What's his name again?
Campaign manager?
Yes.
Waldrop.
Vernon Waldrop.
Vernon T. Waldrop.
Everett, Pete, Delmar, and Tommy peer around the corner of a building. They case the town hall.
It's an invitation-only affair. We'll have to sneak in through the service entrance.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Who elected you leader of this outfit? Since we've been following your lead, we got nothing but trouble. I got this close to being strung up and consumed in a fire. and went no end, and sunstroke, and soggy.
Turned into a frog.
He wasn't turned into a frog.
Almost loved up, though.
Everett stares.
So you're against me now, too?
He nods.
Is that how it is, boys?
They stare back at him.
The whole world, God Almighty, now you.
He stares them down. They look away.
Guess I deserve it.
His brow furrows.
Boys, I know that I made some tactical mistakes. But if you just stick with me, I got a plan. Believe me, boys, we can fix this thing. And I can get my wife back and we can get out of here. Boy.
Stokes's jalopy pulls up outside town hall.
God damn disgrace. Made a travesty of the entire evening. Oh, what I wouldn't give to get a hold of those agitators. I mean, whoever heard of such behavior, even amongst the colored? Or mulattoes, maybe. I suspect some miscegenation in their heritage. How's he gonna explain it? Using the Confederate flag as a missile.
Crazy! No one's ever gonna believe we're a real bank.
Oh, it's gonna work. This guy got close enough to talk to him. Taking off Nuss got more of a future than marrying some guy named Waldrop. I've got that bona fide. I got the answers.
Everett, my beard itches.
They mosey onto the stage wearing fake beards and carrying instruments. Delmar approaches the microphone. Everett leans over the edge.
In the jailhouse now, fellas. Neighborhood of B.
Penny sits at a table in front of the stage. Everett tries to get her attention. She turns away.
I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob. He used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy around. Well, I
feel we're leaving the state. We're pursuing opportunities in another venue. I got big plans. Not minstrelsy. This year's just a dodge. I'm gonna be a dentist. I know this guy will print me up a license.
She turns away.
He's in the jailhouse.
Happy murmurs in Waltrip's ear.
When I told him once or twice to stop playing cards and a shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
Pete steps up to the mic.
Well, that is an improper suggestion. I can't switch sides in the middle of a campaign. Especially to work for a man who likes moral fiber.
Moral fiber? Well, you pixie-faced some bitch. I invented moral fiber. Happy O'Daniel was displaying rectitude and high-mindedness when that egghead you worked for was still missing his drawers.
I want to be what you want me to be. I want you and the guys to come with me.
She turns to Waldron. Everett frowns. Stokes enters.
What are you doing here, Pappy?
Well, I guess someone let on we were giving out liquor.
You'll be laughing at the other side of your face come November.
Pappy old Daniel will be laughing then.
Not out the other side of his face, though.
Oh, no. Just the regular side.
Delmar and Pete take off their hats and take bows.
Well, my daughter's too, Penny.
She shakes her head.
Ain't you ever heard of Amor Fidelis?
In Cyrus.
The audience stands. Everett races to the microphone. They look in awe as the crowd cheers and toss handkerchiefs. Everett glances back at the others before leaning into the microphone.
I am the man of cause and sorrow. I've seen trouble.
God damn! It's a sack of butter, boy!
I bid farewell to old King
Kentucky. The plains were high, I was born and raised. The place where he was born and raised.
Everett dances, shrugging his shoulders and strutting across the stage. Penny covers her mouth. Stokes watches with narrowed eyes. Pappy and his crew glance between the soggy bottom boys and the excited audience. Everett dances across the stage.
Holy moly! These boys are a hit! But Pappy, he's immigrating!
Wait.
So I guess most of mine is integrated.
You miscegenated! All you boys is miscegenated! Give me a microphone! Oh, give me a microphone! Give me a microphone! These boys is not white! These boys is not white. Hell, they ain't even old-timey. Look, I happen to know, ladies and gentlemen, that this band of miscreants here this very evening interfered with a lynch mob in the performance of its duties.
His gaze swivels back and forth.
Well, it's true. See, I belong to a certain secret society. I don't believe I gotta mention its name, you know. And these boys here, they trampled all over our venerated observances and rituals. Now, this here music is over. I ain't done.
Pappy grins.
Hey, I ain't a handy. Listen to me. These boys desecrated a fiery cross.
Waldrop hurries up and whispers in Stokes's ear.
And they convicts, folks. Fugitives escaped off the farm. Now, folks, these boys got to be remanded to authorities. Criminals. And I have it from the highest authority that that Negro sold his soul to the devil.
Oh.
Wait a minute now, folks. No, it's true. It's true. Wait a minute, folks. Now. Is you is or is you ain't my constituency? Is you is or is you ain't my constituency?
Radios blare his tirade.
Is you is.
The mic cord is pulled.
Is you is or is you ain't my constituency? Oh, come on, folks. No, it's Homer now. Come on, I'm a friend of the little man.
The audience throws produce at him. Pappy guffaws. A mob bursts in, carrying a log. They run towards him. They hoist him onto the log and carry him out. The crowd cheers and shake their fists at his retreat. Everett leans into the mic.
Hey, it's heavy day. Hail my cover. I'm never expect to see you again.
Shoves his way onto the stage. Pappy boogies on stage. Pappy licks his thumb and presses it to his rear. He shimmies. Pappy steps in front of the microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, here and listening at home, the great state of Mississippi,
Pappy O'Daniel, Governor,
wants to thank the Soggy Bottom Boys for that wonderful performance.
Pappy leads the audience in applause.
Now, it looks like the only man in this great state who ain't a music lover is my esteemed opponent in the upcoming, Homer Stokes. Yeah, well, there ain't no cup of taste. It sounded to me like he was harboring some kind of hateful grudge against the Soggy Bottom Boys on account of their rough and rowdy past. Looks like Homer Stokes and the kind of fella who wants to cast the first stone.
He holds up a hand.
Well, I'm with you folks. I'm a forgive and forget Christian. And I say, if their rambunctiousness and misdemeanor is behind them...
He glances at them.
It is, ain't it, boys?
Yes, sir, it is.
Well, then I say, by the power vested in me, these boys is hereby pardoned.
The audience is on their feet, jumping. Pappy shoves the boys back.
And furthermore, in the second Pappy O'Donnell administration, these boys is going to be my brain trust.
Everett grins and nods. Delmar glances at him.
What's that mean, Everett?
Delmar means that you, me, and Tommy are going to be the power behind the throne, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
So without further ado, and by way of endorsing my candidacy, the Soggy Bottom Boys is going to lead us all in a chorus of You Are My Sunshine.
Ain't you, boys?
Everett nods.
Governor, it's one of our favorites.
Son, you're going to go far.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Later, Everett walks out with Penny.
I guess Vernon T. Waldrop is going to be going on relief. Maybe I can throw a little patronage his way.
Give him a job digging ditches, rounding up stray dogs.
So is the marriage off then, Ms. Worby?
McGill. No, the marriage will take place at Clint.
A little change of cast. Me and the little lady are going to pick up the pieces and retie the knot, metaphorically speaking. You boys are invited, of course. Hell, you're the best man. Already got the rings.
He frowns.
Where's your ring, honey?
I ain't worn it since our divorce came through. Must still be in the roll top in the old cabin. Never thought I'd need it. Vernon bought one encrusted with jewels.
Now's the time to buy it off and cheap.
Penny scowls at him.
We ain't getting married with his ring. You said you'd changed.
Honey, you're just no pewter thing.
Ain't gonna be no wedding.
It's just a symbol, honey.
No wedding.
We'll go fetch it with you, Everett.
It's just... Shut up, Delmar. It's just a symbol.
I've spoken my piece and counted to three.
She turns away.
She counted to three. Damn it. She counted to three.
Son of a bitch!
You have any idea how far that cabin is?
A mob carrying torches marches down the road. A fiddle player and a mandolin player accompany. Two men escort George, who's weighed down with chains. George is light on his feet and gleeful.
George?
Hello, boys! Well, these little men finally caught up with the criminal of the century. Looks like the chair for George Nelson. Yup, gonna electrify me. I'm gonna go off like a Roman candle. 20,000 volts chasing a rabbit through yours truly. Goddamn, gonna suck all the power right out of the state. Gonna shoot sparks out the top of my head and lightning from my fingertips. I'm George Nelson, and I'm feeling 10 feet tall.
Looks like George is right back on top again.
A farmer and a cow bring up the rear. The bloodhound snuffles at a cabinet. It opens, and he sniffs at a dozen cans of pomade. On a road.
Yeah, these two boys get to see the ancestral manse. The home where I spent so many a happy day in the bosom of my family. A refugium, if you will, with a mighty oak tree out front and a happy little tire swing on it.
He gestures, but instead of a tire swing, there are three nooses and three men, each digging a grave.
Where's the happy little tire swing?
Police appear and surround them.
End of the road, boys.
The marshal exits the cabin.
Now, wait a minute.
Let's go, boy.
It's had its twists and turns.
Wait a minute now.
Now it deposits you here.
But wait a minute.
You have eluded fate and you have eluded me for the last time. Tie their hands, boys.
You can't do this now.
Didn't know you'd be bringing a friend. He'll just have to wait his turn. share one of your graves.
You can't do this. We just got pardoned by the governor himself.
It went out on the radio.
Is that right?
The marshal and his dog stare at them.
Well, we ain't got a radio.
The convicts' faces fall.
God have mercy.
The gravediggers climb out of the holes.
You got to go to that lonesome valley.
It ain't fit.
It ain't the law.
The law?
Law is a human institution. Nobody else can go there for you, no.
Perhaps you should start making your prayers.
An officer removes their hats.
Oh, my God. Everett?
Everett's face is drawn.
Tommy, I'm sorry we got you into this.
Good Lord. What do we do?
Look down and recognize us, poor sinner.
Everett gets down on his knees. He stares up at the heavens.
Please, Lord. I just want to see my daughters again. I've been separated from my family for so long. I know I've been guilty of pride and sharp dealing. I'm sorry that I turned my back on you, Lord. Forgive me. But help us, Lord. For the sake of my family, for Tommy's sake, and for Delmer's and Pete's.
He searches the skies.
Let me see my daughters again, Lord. Help us, please.
Delmar, then Pete, and the dog notice something. Trickles of water flow across the earth. Everett stares down as streams of water run under his knees. They look towards the cabin. Everett gets to his feet.
Got to go to the lonesome.
Sprays of water mist the air. Behind the cabin, a wall of water crashes down. The marshal turns as the water hits the cabin and destroys it. The wall of water flows straight towards them and hits them head on. Blue water covers everything. A tin of pomade floats by. It's followed by a dozen others, and the marshal's sunglasses. Everett struggles to right himself in the water and swim for the surface. A banjo floats by. A framed photo swirls by with more tins of pomade. A phonograph horn spins by. The submerged bloodhound drifts helplessly in the current. The tire swing, a length of rope tied around it, floats past. The raggedly frayed end of the rope trails behind. More pomade tins swirl through the murky blue of the water. Later, the tins float to the surface. Everett comes up gasping. He thrashes about. The water churns. Nearby, Delmar surfaces. Pete pops up next to him. A coffin jettisons out of the water and crashes back down. It floats. Everett paddles towards it. Pete, Delmar, and Everett reach the coffin and hang off it.
A miracle! It was a miracle!
Delmer, don't be ignorant. I told you they was flooding this valley.
No, that ain't it!
We prayed to God and he pitied us.
Well, it never fails. Once again, you two hayseeds are showing how much you want for intellect. There's a perfectly scientific explanation for what just happened.
That ain't the tune you were singing back there at the Gallus.
Well, any human being will cast about in a moment of stress. No, the fact is they're flooding this valley so they can hydroelectric up the whole darn state. Yes, sir. South is gonna change. Everything's gonna be put on electricity and run on a paying basis. Out with the old spiritual mumbo-jumbo, the superstitions, and the backward ways. We're gonna see a brave new world where they run everybody a wire and hook us all up to a grid. Yes, sir. A veritable age of reason, like the one they had in France. Not a moment too soon.
A roof of a barn floats near them. A cow stands atop it.
Not a moment too soon.
He looks to the side.
Hey, there's Tommy. Tommy, what you riding there?
He clings to a piece of furniture.
Whoa. Roll-top desk!
The desk rotates and reveals the closed roll-top. Everett and Penny stroll through town.
All's well that ends well, so the poet says.
That's right, honey.
I don't mind telling you, I'm awful pleased. My adventuring days have come to an end. Time for this old boy to enjoy some repose.
That's good, honey.
You were right about that ring, too. Any other wedding band wouldn't do. This year was foreordained. Fate was smiling on me. You just have to have confidence.
That's not my ring.
God, what?
That's not my ring.
Not your ring.
That's one of Aunt Herlaine's.
You said it was in the roll-top desk.
I said I thought it was in the roll-top desk.
No, you said
that. Under the mattress, sir.
No.
Maybe my shipper robe. I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry, honey.
Well, we need that ring.
Well, that ring is at the bottom of a pretty darn big lake.
Uh-uh.
A 9,000-hectare lake.
I don't care if it's 90,000.
But, honey...
That lake was not my door.
Oh, of course not.
I counted to three, honey.
No, wait. Honey, finding one little ring in the middle of all that water, one hell of a heroic
task. He chases after her. Their girls, tied to a rope by the waist, trail after them. The youngest girl pauses on train tracks as she sees the man on his handcar gliding away. The rope tugs, and she hurries off. The image fades to shades of gray as the man pumps the handles of the handcar. He makes his way slowly down the tracks as the image fades to black. American Humane Association was on set to monitor the animal action. No animal was harmed. Scenes which may appear to place an animal in jeopardy were simulated. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious. And any similarity to the name, character, or history of any actual person, living or dead, is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. And its unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Copyright 2000, Touchstone Pictures and Universal Studios. All rights reserved.
Thank you.
we'll keep on the sunny side of life. Side of life, it will help us every day. It will brighten all the way if we'll keep on the sunny side of life. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life.
It white letters across a white ring, working title films. A black sketch of a horse's rear end. The horse slowly turns and looks over its shoulder. Mike Zoss Productions.